This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Haney. What was Findlay Market like almost 50 years ago? Later in the show, we'll hear about a new exhibit that lets you look back at the Cincinnati landmark in 1966, and we'll talk about Findlay Market's past, present, and future. But first, approximately 650,000 inmates were released from American prisons last year. The federal government estimates that within 3 years, roughly 40% of those former prisoners will be back behind bars. The recidivism rate is much lower in Ohio at about 27%, yet it's still a constant and concerning problem. Here to discuss efforts to help ex-offenders reenter society and maintain a lifestyle that keeps them from offending again and going back to prison are Deanna Hoskins, director of the Hamilton County Office of Reentry, John Harris with the Episcopal Diocese of Southern Ohio, and Charles Fisenmeyer from Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish. And Deanna, John, and Charles, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Senator Rob Portman called the issue of recidivism, the rate at which released prisoners return to prison or get convicted again, he called it a vicious cycle. And I'm sure that's something we would all agree with. Deanna, what makes this such a tough issue to deal with?
One of the issues is that when individuals are released back into the community, a lot of their basic human needs aren't met. So there are needs that every individual needs to, as a springboard to be able to be successful. We need housing. We need employment to make money to pay for the housing. Different things of that nature. But there was never a continuity of care from the community to welcome and absorb individuals back in to individuals getting released. So they were kind of in a how do I figure this out stage, especially individuals who have been removed for 10 to 15 years and everything in our city has changed.
Charlie, what are some of the challenges you see that make this such a difficult issue to deal with?
Well, it for the returning citizens, the challenge is for them to be forgiven. And I think for us in the faith-based community to recognize that they need somebody to walk with them on this new path and to offset the fear they have that their life sentence begins when they get released. And so the faith-based community needs to rise up and walk with these men and women and help them get back on that road.
And John, what about from your perspective? Why is this such a tough thing to deal with?
Well, I would echo both what Deanna and Charles just said. But one of the other things that happened in our society, I think, over the last 50 years with the black community especially, the church has always been the base of keeping the community together. But I think that people coming out of prison today are coming into a community that the basic support is not there. The community support is not there. Our communities, especially the income gap between middle class and lower income workers is the issue. But the faith community, I think, can speak up, can step up to the plate and to bring support that's needed. I came here today really to talk about a symposium that we're having this coming Saturday. It's titled Renewing Our Commitment to the Ministry of Social Justice and Reconciliation. And it speaks to the issue of the Second Chance legislation. As a matter of fact, Deanna's going to be one of the workshop leaders. We'll be having Dr. Newman, who is the president of the Underground Freedom Center, will be one of the speakers. And Dr. Kelly Douglas Brown, who's written a lot on gender and race, will be the preacher for the afternoon. This will take place at the cathedral, the Episcopal Theater at 4th and Sycamore, from 9:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Saturday. And we'd like to invite the community to be a part of that.
Kind of building on what John's offering out at Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish on Beachmont Avenue in Anderson, starting on the 17th of February, we're going to use a prison reform program from the Just Faith organization. It's called Church of the Second Chance. It's a 9 Tuesday evenings. It's based on the writings of Jens Sorting, a German who's jailed in Virginia and has written many books from in prison. He's serving 2 life sentences. The program will deal with church teaching, misconceptions about prisons, sentencing policies, the death penalty, women in prison, reconciliation, restorative justice. So we invite folks who are interested to sign up.
And we have links to those events on our site, WVXU.org. And Deanna, we heard John mention the Second Chance Act. Mm-hmm. Now, what exactly is that? That was passed, 2008? It's a federal law? And
that's kind of a misconception. Second Chance Act, actually, in its former life, was called PRI, Prisoner Reentry Initiative. And it was focused mostly with the Department of Corrections. In 2000, I know when I worked in Indiana Governor's Office in 2007, I oversaw the Prisoner Reentry Act initiative through the Indiana Department of Corrections. And it focused on what Department of Corrections can do to prepare individuals to partner with community organizations. In Indiana, we partner with faith-based communities. To get individuals going. As John said, the faith community has been healing community and families for years. So it only made sense to go back to the faith community and say, hey, how do we partner with you? Because individuals are returning to the community and they need assistance. But in 2009, the legislation got signed, switched names over to Second Chance. Initially, the PRI came out of Bush administration. Second Chance, Senator Portman kind of pushes that forward about how do we help individuals. And it has taken more of a focus from focusing on the State Department of Corrections and what they can do to community and what can the community do. So when you look at Second Chance Act funding, it's mostly focused on mentoring. Are there demonstration projects that can show that they're evidence-based to help people transition? There's some mental health, different things of that nature, some juvenile working with young individuals who are in the criminal justice system. So it has taken on a more of a community approach as well. But when we talk about the legislation, it's mostly around funding. When you say Second Chance, and of course the reauthorization happened again, and we were blessed with a Second Chance Act demonstration project for 2015. In that, partnering with the Hamilton County Justice Center, the Sheriff's Office, University of Cincinnati, Dr. Ed Letesta, and the University's Criminal Justice Institute, Corrections Institute, we are implementing a reentry pod inside of our Justice Center to start providing evidence-based cognitive behavior programming. But what we're also going to do, the first time in the country that it's been done, we're going to start working with those individuals who are incarcerated. We're going to start working with their family members as well, to become a support network for them so that individuals aren't returning if the family is kind of in crisis, like John said, in those low social economic situations. How do we help to start bringing them out of those situations, which may have led to some of the criminal activity that was going on? One of the things we know in Hamilton County, the demographics of the individuals we send to state prison is normally drug trafficking, drug abuse, robbery, and burglary, which we can associate the latter two to drug addiction and mental illness as mm-hmm. well. We have a high population of that. So in understanding that, sometimes how do we work to help pull families up out of the situations that they're in?
Deanna, what's the recidivism rate like in Hamilton County?
Well, in Hamilton County, we are still working on our exact numbers, but one of the projects that had taken place has acknowledged that from a State Department of Corrections to Hamilton County, we are down 29%. Those individuals released from state corrections back to Hamilton County are recidivating at a 29% rate. Hamilton County itself, within our local justice center that we cycle about 45,000 people a year through, an average individual returns to our local system 7 times in 1 year.
Charlie, are prisoners getting the help that they need in prison, or does the prison environment just make things more difficult?
Well, it's a challenge. I think Deanna touched on mentoring, which is a crucial aspect of walking with both inmates, mentoring in prison, and mentoring returning citizens when they get out. The ODRC has started a mentoring program in prison here in Cincinnati. The Archdiocese is going to partner with Warren County Correctional Institute to do some mentoring in prison. Of course, there's a number of faith-based organizations in Cincinnati who mentor returning citizens. So there's big opportunities there. One statistic I wanted to kind of reinforce what Deanna was saying, the rate of incarceration of family members of men or women that have been in prison is about 70%. So getting to the families is really crucial, because once they've started down that path with a mother or father incarcerated, many times the family members follow suit. And so there's a big challenge to work with the families.
Is that 70% a national figure, an overall
figure? That's a national figure.
Mm-hmm. John, what are the challenges that someone typically faces? They've served their time in prison and now they've been released. What are the difficulties they have reentering society?
Well, first of all, the system itself, a felon loses its rights, number one. And most felons coming back don't have the right to housing, a lot of public programs they don't have the right to. Now, there is getting a job. There's some state efforts now to remove the box from the employment application, whether or not you've been a felon, whether or not you served time or not. So the rights, first of all, is one of the biggest issues. So the system, just breaking down the system that removes the rights of a citizen to come back into full citizenship once a person has been incarcerated. And I think Deanna can speak more to that.
Yeah. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we talk about are the myths that are in the community. Individuals do struggle with getting housing and employment and different things, but what we also have found out that not only do we have local or state or federal barriers in regulations, but we also have interpersonal barriers as well, where individuals don't understand, especially in the African-American community, and that's what I can speak to. One of the biggest myths that has transponded in the African-American community is that I can't live in public housing because I'm a convicted felon. That's not true. There are rules and regulations that certain charges may be disqualified from getting in housing, but because that's a perceived ideal in our community, people with felonies don't even apply. I believe there's a perceived idea of what employers I can work with. I have a relationship with the HR vice president of our HR for University Hospital, and we talk all the time. Because he's a hospital, certain charges he cannot hire for, but he's more than willing to work with us for those individuals who meet the qualifications to be employed. Same as with Cincinnati Bell when we start talking about our major employers in the area. So we do have private employers who just refuse to hire individuals, which is a EEOC violation. You cannot discriminate based on a criminal background. And although individuals with criminal backgrounds are not a protective class, there is a clause in that Civil Rights Act that says you cannot disparately discriminate against a disparate population. And when you look at the population of African Americans and Latinos who are arrested and convicted at a higher rate of any other culture or race, you are outright discriminating. So you have to follow EEOC rules that look at and determine what's the nature of the offense, when did the offense happen, what's the relation of the offense in relation to the job they're applying for. So those things, we're trying to educate employers around that. And what I always tell people is right now, Pepsi, BMW, and Dollar General have all been sued because they had a blanket policy of no felons or no criminal convictions.
We have a really cool example in Cincinnati. Nehemiah Industries is a business in Queensgate, and 70% of their employees are returning citizens, and they've had great success. In fact, instead of a human resources person, they have a social worker on staff to help with their staff. So they've had real good success down there.
We'll continue our conversation after the break, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guests this afternoon are Deanna Hoskins, Director of the Hamilton County Office of Reentry, John Harris with the Episcopal Diocese of Southern Ohio, and Charles Fisenmeyer from Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish. We're talking about efforts to help ex-offenders reenter society and avoid going back to prison. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Deanna, you wanted to follow up on what Charlie was saying about there's a program at Great American Ballpark that the county's involved in.
Yes, when he spoke about Nehemiah Manufacturing, because Nehemiah started as providing transitional employment, because not only do individuals have issues getting employment, somehow balancing that work-life issues they struggle with. So at Great American Ballpark, as you guys know, we needed to replace our seats. Replacing the seats, finding a contractor, getting the mold for the seats was going to cost the county well over $5 million. So Great American Ballpark Operations and Office of Reentry partnered together. We hired 60 individuals who had come through the Office of Reentry who have criminal backgrounds. They are actually county employees, and they are replacing the seats at the stadium. By not going through a contractor and in hiring these individuals who were trying to reintegrate back and work with our office, we were able to save taxpayers in Hamilton County over $3 million during this project. But one of the biggest assets that we believe that has happened is the Office of Reentry is able to work with those individuals to address some of those work-life issues. They're getting an employment history. Not only are they getting an employment history, they have an evaluation, and they were actually county employees. So now we are partnered with other employers in the area to say, how do we utilize a program such as this nature where we help individuals get balanced, whether they need driver's license, child support issues, they have housing issues. We get them stable in that area, that the barriers that normally when they do get a job, they can't retain because they have other life issues going on. So we're now starting to talk to employers in the community to become a pipeline for them to permanent employment.
Is that the kind of out-of-the-box thinking that's going to be needed to help prisoners reenter society?
And we have to get out of the box. This is not a textbook cookie-cutter approach. Some of the issues that individuals deal with, I mean, just emotional stability of when things don't go right. Because of knowing the population that we're dealing with, sometimes there's a sense of entitlement. Sometimes there's the instant gratification of I want it now. But building that work history, they're learning how to be accountable. They're learning how to be at work at 8 o'clock and stay till 3 o'clock. They're learning that it's a half an hour lunch break and you come back in a half an hour. Some of the things that we take for granted that individuals, to them, it may not have made sense that I don't start work till 8, but the first bus gets me there at 7:05 and the next bus gets me there at 8:05, that I need to be on the 7:05. Be on time.
What's the status in Ohio as far as allowing prison industries as a way to train prisoners about how you work, how you conduct yourself? You brought up some interesting points about they have to learn how to be on time, how to just keep their lunchtime to half an hour, that kind of thing. Does Ohio allow prison industry, and if what's the status there?
We do have prison industries in there are a lot of training programs that go on in the Department of Corrections. A lot of people don't think so. I know Director Gary Moore has just created what we call a tier prison process, where we have what's called a reentry center for individuals coming back to certain areas of Ohio. So for Hamilton County, Pickaway Correctional is our reentry center. And at Pickaway, they are actually replicating real life at that facility. They're getting CDL truck driving. The Ohio Department of Transportation is actually going on site, and they're getting CDL licensures. There are other training programs that are going on there. There's cognitive behavioral treatment. But there's also the accountability that is supposed to start taking place of this is real life. You need to get up at a certain time. You need to be held accountable. And being at the reentry center is not just part of your incarceration center sentence. It's actually a privilege to be, because there's a lot more going on there. So they are doing their part as well as trying to get those training programs up and running.
Yeah, again, the one of the things, this is where the faith-based community really needs to marshal its efforts. I know Pastor Aaron Greenlee and Pastor Rousseau O'Neill and Sharon Dittmar, the HELP program that Brother Mike Murphy operates, they all are reaching out. One of the things the faith communities, even our two archdioceses here, Episcopal and Catholics, we could do a better job cooperating and working together. There are so many individual islands. We really have a challenge to put our heads together and deal with what I like to call disconnectedness between all of us who are working these issues. So a big opportunity for faith-based organizations to join hands here.
Charlie, what kinds of things does Immaculate Heart of Mary do to help ex-offenders?
We have the Archdiocese has one of its three priorities for this year is in the social justice area is what's called the Dismas Journey, and IHM has a Dismas Journey team. Its effort is in educating our parishioners about the issues on returning citizens to begin to marshal our parishioners to educate the employers in those parishes about potential opportunities to mentor with returning citizens, to provide a faith-based support for them, to be court advocates when they have to go into court, to do correspondence with them. We do communion service down at the jail every Sunday. I'm a lay chaplain, so I work at the Justice Center. The Kairos Prison Ministry, I go to Lucasville. There are just lots and lots of opportunities, and the needs are huge. And it's not an easy area to work in, but it's one that the faith community needs to step up for. Yeah.
John, tell us about the help that's available for ex-offenders through the Episcopal Diocese.
Well, there's a variety of things that the Episcopal Diocese has been involved in over the years. Kairos is one of them that you just mentioned, which is an ecumenical kind of effort. For a while, we had one of our Episcopal priests was a chaplain at the Justice Center. He does training of lay and clergy folks to go into the jails to do chaplaincy work. The Prospect House, although it's a separate entity, was one of the entities that was funded by the Episcopal Diocese for a long time, still provides support to the Prospect House in good amounts. Anna Louise Inn, which is for women, I've been involved in that ministry for years, as long as I can remember. So there are several programs around town that the Episcopal Diocese has been involved in, both with financial resources as well as training and parishioners in volunteer involvement.
I just visited Prospect House on Monday, and what fabulous work they do on alcohol and drug abuse. It's a residency program, been around since 1970, really fabulous.
John, Charlie said something that got a hear from you. So you have to agree with him that the faith community needs to pull together on this.
By all means, yes. Yes, yeah. I think the faith community can do a lot more. We have a lot of resources. We have human resources. I think there's a yearning, too, in the community. I think our young people especially, although, you see the churches, we hear that the church is dwindling in terms of people coming to church on Sunday morning. But that does not say that folks are not yearning for mission and to do good work in the community. And I think our young people are yearning for that. So I think the church can be do a better job of reaching out to our young people and giving them the opportunity to do work in the community. And
as I visit in the jail, as I visit at Lucasville for Kairos Ministry, the need of the residents of those institutions is humongous. And yes. So they are so happy to have people come, and obviously they have quiet time, and we can help them put it to good use in the faith community.
I think one of the benefits is that previously working in the Indiana Governor's Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, my main role was working with faith-based providers and the faith-based community. Again, as Charlie and John have both said, that this is one issue just in politics is bipartisan, in the community with faith is bipartisan. When you're talking about saving souls and helping individuals transform and being redeemed. I used to always ask, why was I engaging in a lot of the faith things that were going on? But I also understood that that's part of my calling, because it is one issue that I can explain to both any religion. I also work with the Muslim religion as well about individuals returning around that faith as well. So it's kind of funny when I always think about that. I was like, okay, God, that's why I had to sit in that position in that office to carry on. But no, it is it's one issue that crosses, I don't care what your faith is, what your culture is, what your socioeconomic status is. This is one issue, such as with drugs and alcohol as well, that is not a qualifier. You don't have to be a Catholic to be an ex-offender. You don't have to be, your family doesn't have to make $500,000 a year for you to be an alcoholic or a drug addict and get a criminal conviction. So this is one issue where those things that we've always used to separate people and to put people in a status based on their this, that's one issue that don't qualify when it becomes to about talking about being an ex-offender. So we can talk about it in whatever setting we need to be in.
And Director Moore, he deserves a lot of credit, ODRC. We have a director of faith-based ministry in the prison. So here we are chasing God out of the schools, and we're bringing him back into the prison. And why is that? You know, you ask yourself, why is it needed in the prison? Well, I know the answer, but why is it not needed in the school too? So it's really interesting, the focus, and it's having good success in the prison system.
Well, Deanna, Ohio's rate of 27%, that's lower than the national average.
Yes.
So obviously we're doing some things right in Ohio.
Yes.
What more needs to be done, do you think?
Well, let's talk about some of the things that we've done in Ohio. I think we don't talk enough about what has taken place, and the community is not aware of certain law changes that have taken place. So, of course, when I first arrived in 2011, we had House Bill 86. House Bill 86 made it easy for individuals leaving prison who had went through some type of cognitive treatment, such as substance abuse, thinking for a change, and had obtained some type of training, to not get back to the community and be barred from those trainings. So if they were a certified welder, and becoming certified in the state of Ohio required going through a state agency, House Bill 86 made those agencies, they could no longer use that blanket policy of no felons allowed. If an individual had went through those programs and got trained, you had to look at them individually, and they also would get what was called a CAE, Certificate of Accountability and Employment. And then I love to give credit to Stephen Johnson Grove of Ohio Justice and Policy Center, because Stephen then started saying, okay, well, that's fine for people coming home, but what about the people who've been living in the community for years with a criminal background that's struggling getting employment opportunities? So that's when Senate Bill 337 was crafted. We call it the Collateral Sanctions Bill. 337 created what's called a Certificate of Qualification for Employment Opportunities. Individuals apply for it. They have had to been out of prison for a certain amount of time. They have to show how their criminal background has been a direct barrier to employment. Again, those state agencies cannot use that as a blanket policy. But the unique thing about CAEs and CQEs, if an individual has these certifications, there's a clause in there that's a state law that says an employer who hires them with that certificate are exempt from state law of being sued from hiring them.
Big deal.
Because a lot of employers will say, well, my insurance won't let me hire them because they're at risk. I'm at risk of being sued. Well, anybody can sue you. But now we've taken that excuse off the table. Well, this individual has the certificate, you're exempt by state law of being sued. But we also had sentencing reduction, sentencing reform, where mandatory drug sentences that normally would send an individual to prison for a certain amount of time, the state law changed to say those individuals might need to be served in the community. They don't deserve to go to prison, especially if they're a first-time offender, a low-risk offender, don't have a violent history. How do we serve them? Well, now Stephen has pushed for another level of that. So as everyone knows, in Cincinnati, Hamilton County, and even the state of Ohio have all adopted the fair hiring policy. The state no longer has to question on their application. Hamilton County doesn't have it on theirs. Neither does the city of Cincinnati. But there are 10 cities and counties within Ohio who have already adopted this. So just the other day, we got House Bill 56 on the floor. House Bill 56 is the Ohio Fair Hiring Act, where we are asking that in the state of Ohio, the question on the application is banned. There are other 11 other states have
done
it.
That's the ban the box effort,
yes,
is that right? Okay.
That's the ban the box effort. Yep. There are 11 other states who have already done this: Colorado, California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island. So we're just trying to get Ohio on the forefront.
Sounds like we're on the right track, though.
We are. We are really taking steam ahead. When you look at the progressiveness of the laws that have been changed over the last year, every year there's something else coming to the table that says this is a barrier for people reintegrating and being successful. We need to address it.
It's really positive here in Ohio, and I think, you know, some people might be concerned we take the box off the application. Later in the process, at the end of the process, it's still okay to discuss that. What we don't want to do is eliminate these people's opportunities when they first fill out the application.
Deanna, we have to end here. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you. John, if you can make it quick, go ahead.
Well, just quickly, this is an important issue for the faith-based community. You know, when we practice our faith, the three things that all faiths have in common: hospitality to the stranger, solidarity with the poor, and working to provide access for those who are marginalized by society. It's just that simple.
Yeah, good way to end this. Yeah. Good way to end this segment. Thanks, John. Okay. Deanna, John, and Charlie, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Deanna Hoskins is director of the Hamilton County Office of Reentry. John Harris is with the Episcopal Diocese of Southern Ohio. And Charles Fizenmeyer is from Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish.